Blog Talk Radio.
I woke up this morning, toes out of my shoes. Cold north wind was a howling, bringing in the blues. I said, blues, good morning, I don't want to fight. Excuse me while I have a smoke, if I can't find a light. Open up the door and let the good times in. Don't let nothing stand in your way. Just open up the door and let the good times in. Tomorrow's gonna be better than today. I went to that cupboard, found the cupboard bare. What happened to that sip of wine I had hidden there? Over in the corner, a little mouse laid on his side. He was wearing such a grin, I thought the mouse had died. Open up the door and let the good times in. Don't let nothing stand in your way. Open up the door and let the good times in. Tomorrow's gonna be better than today. I won't call my baby when she got to the phone. I kinda had a little feeling my baby was not alone. She said, Daddy, I'm busy. Call some other time. I don't need that woman, but I sure could use a dime. Open up the door and let a good time in. Don't let nothing stand in your way. Open up the door and let a good time in. Tomorrow's gonna be better. Tomorrow's gonna be better than today. Tomorrow's gonna be better than today.
Bing. I love it. I love it.
I'm sitting there tweeting. Bing, bing, bing.
You press a button. Bing, bing.
They all hand you checks. Bing, 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 bing.
We had our beautiful Marine standing there. Bing, 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 bing.
You know, in the old days, bing, bong.
You know, with the map?
Bing, bing, bing.
Little mouse on him. Bing, bing, bing. Bing, 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 bing.
Bing, bing, bing. They're cleaning up.
Fix it up. Bing, bing, bing.
A 14-point plan. Bing, bing, bing.
Anthony Weiner. You know, the little bing, bing, bing.
Everyone's attacked me has gone bing.
Everyone else, bing.
Where have they gone?
Bing.
Wow, what a tackle.
Bing.
Playing cards. Bing, bing, bing.
Those tunnels.
Bing, boom. Right under the toilet.
Bing, boom. Right up.
Bing.
Like a rocket ship, except in the wrong direction.
I'd fly over, drop them right on top, you know, just bing.
They want me to use the pump because the other one, which I really like better than going bing, bing, bing.
It's like puppets. Bing, bing.
Bing, bing, bong, bong, bing, bing, bing.
The bing, bing, bang, bang, boom. I was imitating puppets.
Bing. Bada bing, bada boom. Happy New Year, everybody. Happy New Year indeed. James Bostic here with a New Year's edition of A Conservative's Perspective. Ordinarily, invariably, most of the time, and then sometimes not, and then sometimes other days. But usually, we're live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We have a recorded version of the program that goes out on the Mojo 50 radio network, mojo50.com. If you're not listening, well, you probably should be. It is some of the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio out there, mojo50.com. Also, a plug, Tuesday nights, pardon me, Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock, I want you to go online. Gives you about an hour's break between my show that goes from 7 to 9 and then 10 to midnight. It is Cowboy Logic, Restoring America, and I want you to check that out. That's Don Newen, Donna Fiducia, some friends of mine that have been in the podcast, legends, really, and giants in the podcasting business, to be honest with you. You guys, some of you probably remember Donna Fiducia as the Fox News babe, the prototype Fox News babe back in the day. And then she was, before that, she'd had a long career in AM, or not AM radio, but rock and roll radio on WABC. Might have been AM. I'm not sure, though. I don't think it was. WABC is as a rock and roll disc jockey. So she is radio born and bred, and it's an awesome program. Cowboy Logic Radio. You can just go to cowboylogic.com. You can find it. Just Google it, and it'll take you right to it. Terrific shows. Happy New Year. Clean slate. A do-over. Another shot at making it work. And basically that's what I'm doing here. Those of you, and it was New Year's Eve, so I'm hoping that there weren't that many people listening and that they won't be moved to go check it out in the archive. But if you did listen last night, and if you caught it on the archive anytime in the future, let me apologize. I thought that it would have been, I thought it was a good idea to do a kind of like a New Year's Eve retrospective kind of thing last night. And it happens. It's not rare when it happens. Ordinarily, though, you know, when you have a plan, and I guess I had a plan, my plans usually come, my plans usually start gelling about 5 to 8 minutes before I really need them. So I did have a plan in mind, and it was going to be just kind of like a retrospective thing, the year in review, and try and take a look at where we are right now at this point in time in history here in America and where we're going, what's going to happen. And you know what? The thing just started out weird from the get-go. And I can't account for it. I can only, the full moon, I guess, in my frame of mind. And I was dealing with the prevailing forces of barometric pressure, and it affected me somehow. I don't know. But the whole thing came off as kind of tense, kind of pensive, and I'm not exactly sure why I was feeling that way, but I wasn't. Anyway, it didn't go exactly the way I wanted. It was still an okay program, I guess, as far as that goes. But, again, the whole thing felt off-center from the get-go. But I decided to go ahead and press on with it anyway, since I'd already posted everywhere we were going to be on the air, and you just can't, not do it. So there it was, good, bad, or indifferent. Hopefully this evening will be a bit of an improvement over that. Did you guys have a good New Year's Eve? I mean, after the show. After you went through that buzzkill last night from 7 to 9, did you have a good New Year's Eve? It was quiet, man. It was quiet. I that's kind of how it is these days with me, and that's all right. Overslept, didn't make it up, didn't get back up until midnight to get on Facebook to whoopee with everybody. I was a little bit late, but it was still a good year. It was a good day. Cold, clammy, crappy, rainy, drizzly day here in the Mountain State. But we're off to a new one, man. 2020 is out of here. It's over our shoulder, and it is getting smaller by the moment in our rearview mirror as we kick that piece of crap to the shoulder and got out of there. The cynic in me, the pessimist, since he had such a good time last night, is trying to crawl back. And the first question was, well, okay, great. So it's 2021. Big deal. Is it going to be any different? Does it feel any different? What's going to change? The only change is, what if it gets worse? Well, okay, yeah, I guess that's, yeah, all right. But we don't want to look at it that way. We don't want to look at it that way. And you know what? It can always be worse, even as bad as it is. And as bad as it seems as if it's going to be, it can always be worse. Believe me. Believe me. So we stand up straight. We smear down the cowlick in our hair. We square our shoulders. We knock the dust and the debris and the grime and the generously flung poop that 2020 put on us when we went by that chronological primate house. And we move on. We move boldly on into 2021. What's it going to be? I'll be damned if I know. I really don't. But we're here. You know, you, me, all of us, we're here. And I think we just need to make the best of it. I think it's going to be a good year. We still don't know anything. We still have 6 damn days before this thing is going to settle one way or another. And I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen. And we've been talking about this for a long time. And I know that it's hard to keep something like this fresh. It's hard to keep something like this compelling. Because every Tuesday, every Thursday, 7 p.m., I'm on here. And invariably, this subject comes around. Well, we still don't know nothing. And I wish we did. I wish we did, but we don't. But we're going to, one way or another. We're going to. We're going to find out. Not dead air. And in that time that we're here like this, you and I, waiting to see what's going to happen. You know, it's been 8 weeks. You know, pretty soon 9 weeks of nothing. Basically, but waiting upon the other shoe to drop. And that's just, you know, that's just crazy. But we got to hang tight. And like I said, you know, we got to stand up straight. We got to be, you know, we just got to smile in the face of that adversity. We got to, you know, put on that big Teddy Roosevelt grin and then just drop our heads and run into that wall and do what we can to knock it down. Little note in history here for you hysterical types. 68 years ago today, country singer Hank Williams was found dead in the backseat of his car in Oak Hill, West Virginia. The word iconic, oftentimes overused, but not, I think, in this case. Hank's songs will be ever, forever, just that. He was born in Mount Olive, Alabama, to Alonzo Hubel and Jesse Lilybell Skipper Williams. His great-grandfather, Elijah Williams, had been born in South Carolina in 1815, but had migrated west to Alabama. Alonzo was a World War I veteran and suffered a degree of disability with his facial muscles as a result of war injuries. In addition to English ancestry, he had German blood, and his grandfather, great-grandfather rather, Jesse, his mother's grandfather, Nathaniel George Skipper, fought for the Confederacy in Company E, 2nd Regiment, Alabama Cavalry. His father's war wound disability, the partial facial paralysis, he wound up having to leave his job and go to the hospital, and it was a long recovery with the injuries that he had to rehab back from. It was like 8 years. And so after 8 years in the hospital, he was released and tried to move back in with his family, who in the meantime had ended up in Montgomery, and they were living off of his disability check, and it didn't work. Mom wouldn't have him come back. So in other words, one of the reasons that Hank was good at writing the songs that he did was because he knew something about dysfunction. He knew something about hard times. He was born with a spine deformity that caused chronic pain throughout his life, and it caused him also to wind up being 4F. He had a 4F deferment during the Second World War. That was compounded. This ailment was compounded by the time that he was thrown by a rodeo bull, and it hurt. He was in a lot of pain, and so that led him to self-medicate, which meant that he drank a lot. And it was drinking that basically stymied in the early days his solo career. He had had a couple of bands during the Second World War, but the fellows were usually healthy and they would be called up or they would go to enlist. And so he was stuck there, and he was having trouble making it as a solo act because he was drinking all the time. And it was that drinking that ultimately led to his divorce from his first wife and his dismissal from the Grand Ole Opry. But when it did finally erupt, when it really did catch on, Katie barred the door. And no one would have suspected that it was going to be so short-lived, that it would end in this little southeastern West Virginia town called Oak Hill on a cold winter morning. Even today, with luxury buses and first-class air travel and all the luxuries and modern conveniences of transportation we have today, life of a rock star on the road is probably not nearly as glamorous as we think it is, and it certainly wasn't the case in 1952. What had happened was Hank was scheduled to perform at the Municipal Auditorium in Charleston, West Virginia on New Year's Eve, but an ice storm down in Nashville kept him from flying to Charleston. So that show was canceled. He arranged for a young college student named Charles Carr, who was 18 years old, to drive him from Montgomery to the next scheduled gig, a New Year's Day performance in Canton, Ohio. Hank drank during the trip in his baby blue convertible, and he used the sedative chloral hydrate, which incidentally was also a factor in Marilyn Monroe's death. They checked into a hotel in Knoxville where Carr called for a doctor who injected Hank Williams with vitamin B12 and morphine. I guess a little something to smooth the way for the B12 to kick in. And he had to be literally carried to the car when they left Knoxville after 10 p.m. Carr stopped at an all-night diner in Bristol for something to eat. And when he asked Hank if he wanted something, the answer was no. Short and seemingly insignificant last words for a great poet, in retrospect. Exactly what happened next is still debated, as is common with significant events in small towns. Carr said he stopped at the Pure Oil gas station in East End Oak Hill and found Hank to be cold and stiff. The station's owner, Glenn Burdett, called the police. The coroner, Dr. Ivan Melanin, performed the autopsy at Tyree Funeral Home in Oak Hill and found that Hank's death was from a heart attack. The alcohol, the morphine, and the chloral hydrate were not mentioned. In subsequent interviews, locations became somewhat muddled. Of course, young Carr wasn't familiar with the area. One version had him stopping on the side of the road around Mount Hope and then driving on to Oak Hill, while another, and this was Carr's most common memory, was he had stopped at the Skyline Drive-In in Oak Hill. There was even a doctor in Beckley who said the Carr came to him asking for assistance before they even made it to Mount Hope. Years later, Oak Hill policeman Howard Janey recounted, "I got a call about 7:30 in the morning, so I went down to the gas station. I had seen dead bodies before, so when I looked in the back of the car, I could tell he was dead. I escorted the car to the hospital where they confirmed that Mr. Williams was dead. I was just doing my job. It didn't seem like a big deal at the time. When Joe Tyree was called to collect Hank's body at Oak Hill Hospital, that didn't mean a thing to me. We had a lot of Williamses around here. I just thought it was one of them. Joe later took Hank on his last ride, transporting the body back to Montgomery, Alabama, in the Tyree funeral home hearse. Hank's mother and Thomas Carr's father arrived in Oak Hill the next day. The owner of the Pure Oil Station, Pete Burdett, was tasked with securing the Cadillac, which can now be seen in the Hank Williams Museum in Montgomery, Alabama. He locked it up in the garage, but how secure was it? Because some folks say that Burdett was later seen wearing Hank's characteristic cowboy hat around Oak Hill. Some also say his hair fell out as Hank's revenge. Who knows? But we do know that Glenn Adair, Pete Burdett, died of a shotgun wound to his left chest on May 19, 1955 at age 42. While the death certificate leaves the question unanswered, commonly considered suicide. We also know that everyone involved from, Tom Carr, young Tom Carr and his parents, to Hank's mother, they all commented on how well they were treated by the people of Oak Hill. And while the details may never be clear, Oak Hill will always be associated with Hank's last ride. The Pure Oil Station on the left, just after the much later East End Oak Hill exit ramp, stood there until late 2006, and many fans wanted to make the old filling station into a museum of Hank's last ride, but it never came together, and an excavator unceremoniously knocked the building apart. In Canton on New Year's Day, the show went on. And word of Hank's demise, his passing, hadn't yet got out. But when they made the announcement at the show, the audience laughed because they figured it was just another excuse because old Hank was drunk and wasn't going to make it again. But when performer Hawkshaw Hawkins began singing the hymn, "I Saw the Light" as the opening song, and the other performers joined in, it became clear to the audience that Hank was gone, and they joined in singing as well. That was the same Hawkshaw Hawkins who died in a plane crash with Patsy Cline and Cowboy Copas in 1963, 10 years later. The same Hawkshaw Hawkins who was a native mountaineer born in Huntington, West Virginia, 68 years ago this day, 1953, Oak Hill, West Virginia.
I'd like to start off here with a song that I recorded here not long ago. I think it's one of the prettiest ones I've ever recorded. Boys, if you will, a little tune called The Lost Highway. I'm a rolling stone, all alone and lost, for a life of sin paid the cost. When I pass by, all the people say, "There goes another boy down the lost highway." Just a deck of cards and a jug of wine, and a woman's lies makes a life like mine. For the day we met, I went astray. I started rolling down that lost highway. Thank you. was just a lad, nearly 22. Neither good nor bad, just a kid like you. And now I'm lost, too late to pray. Lord, I've paid the cost on the lost highway. Now, boys, don't start your rambling around on this road of sin. Are you sorrow bound? Take my advice, or you curse the day you started rolling down that lost highway.
Yeah. That's powerful stuff. That really is. That America is feeling. And it was tragic. I mean, the guy was there. He made his mark, and it, you know, he hit, and he was aflame 3-4 years. And then it was over. It was over. Do we remember Jim Morrison? Yeah. Do we remember Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix? Yeah. Do we remember so many other performers who you know, were on the beam, man. They were on the track for stardom, super duper stardom. And it was cut short. We remember all of them. Like I said, we remember Jim Morrison, and we remember Janis Joplin and Hendrix, and we remember, you know, these people that were around for like 4 or 5 years, and then that's it. But we don't remember them, I don't think, the way we remember Hank. Not really sure that there was anybody like him. There's a lot who, you know, Hank, Patsy Cline, Buck Owens. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones from that time. Oh, what was that guy's name? Ray Price, you know, excuse me, often imitated, never duplicated. You know, you can find guys out there that can put that warble and cry in their voice like Hank did, or you can find somebody that's going to nasal it up the way Buck Owens did, or you're going to find somebody who is bourbon smooth like Ray Price. But it ain't gonna be Ray Price. It ain't gonna be Hank. It ain't gonna be Buck. Close, but no cigar. You're not, you know, there's only one Merle Haggard. There's only one Charlie Pride, God rest his soul. Only one George Jones. But I can remember as a kid this place that they're talking about, where no matter where he stopped, ultimately, and all the histories have been consistent in this, it was ultimately at the Pure Oil Station there on the east end of Oak Hill, where maybe the discovery wasn't made, but the discovery was confirmed that old Hank was indeed gone, that he had died. That was 1953. Let's fast forward that about 13 years, and we'll make it 1966. I was 4 years old. But anyway, I can remember anytime we went to Oak Hill, that oil station there, that Pure Oil Station, was always pointed out. Always. It was right across the street from Blackburn Ford over in Oak Hill. Well, in the old days, it was Blackburn Ford. I don't know what it is now. There's nothing there now. And it was, I won't say that, you know, it was pointed out in hushed tones. There was a whole lot of reverence, or, you know, it wasn't like Graceland or anything, but it was it was prominent in the city's in the town's modern history, and it was a point of interest, cultural interest, you know, in country music circles. And you want to talk country music, hey, it's West Virginia, you know, especially in the 1950s and 1960s. You know, I don't want to say, you know, it was like a Mecca or anything like that. The people knew where it was. People were familiar with it. And did people go? Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's sad that back in, because they really did try to get this done. And it was a money issue, if I remember correctly. They say it was a money issue, but if we knew the backstory, it was probably more a vanity issue, and it didn't work out the way certain egos thought it was supposed to, I guess. And again, this is just me speculating. And vanity took precedence over posterity, and they tore the building down. Now it's nothing but an empty lot with the concrete pad where you would pull up where the gas pumps were, and then on the other side there's just a flat, smoothed out place where the building once stood. It's sad. Because I think, and there in terms of modern country music, and we'll say from, I didn't think we'd be going this way either, but here we are. From post-war, from the Second World War up until modern times, I don't know if there would be, and people are so generous with the term influence and people influencing specific art or you know, whatever it is that they're doing, you know, their field of endeavor. But for such a short career, again, let's say it's 3 to 5 years of really being out there, and the magnesium was burning bright before it burned out. A 5-year career, 68 years ago, and the influences that are still seen throughout country music in the last 68 years, that's telling. That's telling. Hank Williams, definitely the Carter family for sure. Mother Maybelle and all the girls. There used to be somewhere on National Public Radio, and I can't remember what they called it. They were film. It was I guess probably at least 16 millimeter, maybe 35 millimeter Technicolor film, because the resolution and the photographic quality is pretty good. Film of the Grand Ole Opry. I don't know how to say it, but before there was a Grand Ole Opry on TV, there was a Grand Ole Opry on a radio going back to the 1920s. But in between, at some point, to bridge the gap, and it apparently was sometime in the 1950s, based on the youth of some of the performers, color film, and they used to show it on National Public Television here in West Virginia. I don't know what it was called. That was the only place I ever saw it, and it was some really impressive stuff. And I think what bothers me more than anything else is that there are a lot of people now in this crossover country music foolishness. They probably don't even know who Hank Williams are. They may know Hank Jr. And there was a girl, Jet Williams is her name. There's Hank Jr. and this girl, Jet, and then there is a grandchild, and I'm not exactly sure. I think he is one of Hank's sons, Hank Williams Jr. the third, or Hank Williams the third, excuse me, Hank Williams Jr. the third, Hank Williams the third, and he's out there working too, and he is a lot like the old man. But that happened New Year's Day, 1953, 68 years ago, a legend in the making, and I would imagine his tragic demise spurred that legend into fruition, gave up the ghost, Oak Hill, West Virginia, New Year's Day, 1953. We will be back with more of ACP right after this.
I'm so lonesome I could cry. I've never seen a night so long when time goes crawling by. The moon just went behind the clouds to hide its face and cry.
Montgomery, I had my guitar on my back, when a stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. He said, "It's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride, son?" And them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white, pale when he asked me for a light. And I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings?" "But if you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride." Then he cried just south of Nashville, and he turned that car around. He said, "This is where you get off, boy, 'cause I'm going back to Alabama." As I stepped out of that Cadillac, I said, "Mister, many thanks, He said, you don't have to call me Mr. Mister. The whole world called me Hank. He said, Drifter, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Have you paid your dues? Can you mourn the blues? Can you bend down guitar strings? He said, boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? But if you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride. Drifter, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Have you paid your dues? Can you mourn the blues? Can you up and down your guitar string? He said, boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? But if you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride. If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride.
Yeah, let's talk country. The legend is, the urban legend is, that the night back in the early 1980s, after this song had been released and David Allan Coe performed it at the Opry, as he was singing, the power went out throughout the entire hall. And then just as mysteriously came back on. Conservatives Perspective here, Patriot Nation Radio Network. Good to be with you yet again. Happy New Year, guys. Happy damn New Year. 2021 is finally here. Old 2020 has rolled on out, and ain't nobody happier about that than me, I would say. But you know what? This is where that old saw about counting your blessings and accentuating the positive really do cut their best wood. 2020 was a god-awful year for many, many, many people in this country. And it was, in my opinion, in many, many applications, needlessly so. People are still suffering under lockdowns. People are still dealing with these tyrannical and draconian measures put in place by these local and regional dictators. And it's killing. They've been bled white. I shudder to think of the businesses that will never return. And businesses fail all the time. There'll be another guy that comes in there and wants to start up. Well, yeah, maybe there will be, but probably not under these conditions. And the powers that be in the municipal, in the county, in the state satraps, they don't want things to change, man. They like the power. And as the march of time moves forward, it's not going to get any better. We'll give you cats some names. Julian Castro. Cory Booker. Pete Buttigieg. Tulsi Gabbard. Amy Klobuchar. Tom Steyer, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Julian Castro. Did I mention Julian Castro? Okay. Also Rams. Oh, Kamala Harris, of course. Also Rams. Ne'er-do-wells, wannabes, all of them. Are you aware that our potential, God, I can't believe I'm saying it, vice president during the Democrat campaign, during the Democrat primary campaigns, I don't think ever carried more than 1% of the vote, or 1% of approval in approval ratings? That's it. And there were guys who were less. Swalwell, who apparently makes Chinese swing American, he didn't even make 1%. I think he got a fraction of a point of in approval. And we're going to get into Eric here in a little bit. You guys remember Eric Swalwell, right? I know you do. If nothing else, I think his greatest act garnering any kind of notoriety at all is when he farted on national television and didn't have the stones to own it. And then he entered into the Twitterverse in total denial of that, but he farted on TV and then he couldn't say, well, okay, guys, yeah, it was me. I'm sorry. I farted. I was nervous and it just slipped out. He couldn't do that. He had to lie about it. He's on the House Intelligence Committee. Okay. Cat was banging a Chinese agent. Michelle, they say Fang, F-A-N-G, but I'm not exactly sure that's the pronunciation. I think it may be more like Fong or Fung. It's weird because the Chinese are like that. But it may be Michelle Fang, and apparently those fangs have come back to bite him on the ass because it appears that he had a long-term relationship with her and that it was sexual in nature. She is a Chinese spy who was banging low-level and mid-level cats like Swalwell all the way across the country, because those low-level and mid-level cats of today are going to be the heavy hitters of tomorrow. Pete Buttigieg, case in point. And we're not going to talk so much right now about Buttigieg as we are about the old man. And the information I'm sharing with you right now comes from our friend Trevor Loudon's book, Reds or White House Reds. It's his latest one. He's also the guy that wrote Enemies Within, which is a monster. It's like 400 pages, but it's worth it. It's worth the read. It is totally worth the read. I would consider Trevor to be perhaps the foremost expert on communist infiltration into the halls of government and power in the United States over anybody. This guy knows it. And anyway, when we talk about communism, there's Marxism, there's Leninism, there's something called Gramscian communism. We're going to talk about that. Just like, there are different denominations in Christianity, thusly, you have different forms of socialism and communism. And Pete Buttigieg just happens to be the son, the only son, of the late Joseph Buttigieg. Now, Petey's dad. And keep in mind, Pete Buttigieg is slated to be Joe Biden's pick for Secretary of Transportation. I go figure. Joseph Buttigieg was the William R. Keenan Jr. Professor Emeritus at the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana, and he died January 27, barely a year ago, at age 71. Joseph Buttigieg's main areas of interest were modern literature, critical theory, and the relationship between culture and politics. But his real passion was Gramscian. Pete Buttigieg's dad, Joe, became one of the world's leading authorities on the works of the late Italian Communist Party theoretician Antonio Gramsci. Now, after being jailed in 1926 by Benito Mussolini, Antonio Gramsci spent 11 years in prison, dying behind prison bars in April 1937. And he spent his last years examining the failures of several communist revolutions that had taken place after World War I in Europe. His prison notebooks rank almost as highly as the works of Marx and Lenin in terms of influence in the modern communist movement. again, this is Pete Buttigieg's dad. And we all know the old saying, the apple does not fall far from the tree. To explain why the communist revolutions failed in Hungary and Germany with very little working class support, Gramsci came up with this theory called cultural hegemony. Gramsci believed that workers failed to support the revolution or even fought against it because the state or the capitalist class, the bourgeoisie, used cultural institutions to maintain power through control of the arts, the media, the education system, civil society, and especially the church. The bourgeoisie promotes ideas that became the dominant ideology of the masses. This is what Gramsci's talking about when he talks about cultural hegemony. It's a sort of all-pervasive brainwashing that conditioned the common people to accept the status quo and to remain intensely suspicious of change, especially revolutionary change. Therefore, the traditional violent socialist revolution wasn't going to be successful in Western countries. The revolution could only succeed if communist forces could first infiltrate socialist ideas into all of society's leading institutions. Are you ready for this? To alter the consciousness of the people. Today, Gramsci's ideas have completely permeated the U.S. left. Even pro-China groups like Communist Party USA and Liberation Road are heavily influenced by Antonio Gramsci's ideas. Democratic Socialists of America, the nation's largest Marxist organization, is almost completely Gramscian in both theory and its practice. Gramsci is why Hollywood and most of the entertainment industry is well to the left. He's the reason that most college campuses are now dominated by Marxism and its cultural spinoff, political correctness. Gramsci is why the vast bulk of American media outlets are unapologetically leftist. Gramsci is the reason why so many American churches now preach Marxist concepts like social justice and critical race theory and call it Christianity. Gramsci's ideas have so permeated American society that a significant minority of young Americans will now happily vote this country into socialism, or what they naively conceive as socialism. I think the word we're looking for here is totalitarianism. And Pete Buttigieg's father was this country's leading Gramscian scholar. Nobody in America understood the man or his ideas or how to effectively implement them better than Pete Buttigieg's dad. Joseph Buttigieg was the editor and translator of the multi-volume complete critical edition of Antonio Gramsci's Prison Notebooks, the guide. Several of his articles on Gramsci have been translated into Italian, German, Spanish, Portuguese, and Japanese. He was the founding member and one-time president of the International Gramsci Society. Buttigieg served on the Gramsci Society's board alongside British writer Eric Hobsbawm, one of the most famous Marxist historians of the 20th century. One leftist Italian minister of culture appointed him to a commission of experts to oversee what was called the Edizione Nazionale, the complete works of Gramsci's writings. When it comes to Antonio Gramsci, there is no greater fanboy than Pete Buttigieg's dad. He lived and breathed this just as he would have lived and breathed the Communist Manifesto. Now, what do you think that is going to mean for little Pete? Excuse me. I'm going to have to hit the mute button there. I've got a cough. And we're back. So Pete Buttigieg's dad knows this Gramscian branch of communism inside out. I want to go back and I want you to think about as it would apply today. Through control of the arts, the media, the education system, civil society, and especially the church, the bourgeoisie promote ideas that become the dominant culture, the dominant ideology of the masses, and that is what is cultural hegemony. That's what we see going on today, but it's not the bourgeois. It's not the bourgeoisie that are doing that. It's not the capitalists. It's not the free enterprise people. It's not the free market people. It's the communists. How many times have you guys Googled or YouTubed a talking point where you'll see one news anchor after another, after another, after another, saying exactly the same thing? And no one, the newspapers, the movies, the TV news, culture, anybody on the left that's part of this in trying to gain this cultural hegemony, and they've done a hell of a job of it, and I think they're pretty much there. None of them walk out of step. Everybody is shoulder to shoulder. Everybody is lockstep. You have to have the same attitude on abortion. You have to have the same attitude on immigration and borders. You have to have the same attitude on guys pretending to be girls and wanting to go in women's bathrooms. And you have to be okay with it. You can't deviate. They have all these things, all these identity politics and diversity deal breakers that you have to go with. And if you don't, I guarantee you they will cancel you quicker than they would cancel me or anybody else who is a conservative. I promise you. Now, all these people that we talked about, Tom Steyer, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, Tulsi Gabbard, Joe Biden, we've talked a lot about Joe, Pete, Amy Klobuchar, Julian Castro, all these guys. Look, you shrug your shoulders and you say, well, so what? They're nobodies. Nobody's heard of them since the end of the election. They have their moment and they're done. No, they're not done. They're not done by a long shot. These people that we just talked about are the future leaders, the vanguard of the next generation of Democrat socialist, which means socialist, left-wing socialist leaders that are going to be running what they call the Democrat Party. But it's nothing of the kind. And as we have watched this generational, this intergenerational metamorphosis of the Democrat Party into whatever the hell it is now and where it's going, it's astonishing. That is the next step. That was about Pete Buttigieg. Amy Klobuchar, the same thing. Julian Castro, the same thing. Tom Steyer, all these guys are collectivists. These cats are not into individuality. They're not into you do you, I do me. No, they're into we do you. And you're going to do what we tell you to do, or we're really going to do you. They make noises about being the proponents of free thought, but they're nothing of the kind. They pander to all these, in many cases, psychologically tortured groups. Trying to give them legitimacy, or promising them legitimacy, if, you know, you just remember me come next Tuesday, you know what I mean? And they'll say anything to anybody. These people are the next generation of leaders. They're motivated. They're bitter. They don't care about this country. And they would happily sacrifice this country along with those citizens who do love and care about this country at the altar of their political ideology in a heartbeat. They would do it today, now, if they thought they could. If it would seal the deal, they would cut the throat on the Statue of Liberty in a heartbeat. These are the people that pull down statues of Abraham Lincoln, for God's sake. What do you think you're going to get? And these are the people that are next in line. They're going to be looked after. They're going to be given lucrative teaching gigs or contributors positions at CNN or ABC or here and there. They're going to be granted legitimacy. Former presidential contender Pete Buttigieg, you know, that's what they're going to say. They're not going to say, you know, Gramscian communist devotee of the second generation, Pete Buttigieg, which is exactly what he is. He's a Democratic Socialist of America member. He's all the way. He's there. He is his father's son. He's just one of them. We'll be hitting some more of them as the weeks go on. Top of the hour. I think we'll take a little bit of a break, and we will be back with more of a conservative perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network.
Such a night. It's such a night. Sweet confusion under the moonlight. Such a night. Somebody else will. If I don't do it, you know somebody else will. If I don't do it, you know somebody else will. If I don't do it, you know somebody else will. And it's such a night. It's such a night.
stuck in my direction. I caught it in my hands today. I finally made a tricky French connection. You winked and gave me your okay. I'll take you on a trip beside the ocean and drop the top of Chesapeake Bay. Ain't nothing like the sky to do. Back and observe the constellations and watch the moon smiling bright. I'll play the radio on Southern Station, 'cause Southern builds a hill at night. You say you came to Baltimore from Ole Miss, a class of 7-4 gold ring. The eastern moon looks ready for a wet kiss to make the tide rise again.
Hey, Moonlight, man, a full moon here the last couple nights. Ah, boy, yeah, well, it does feel right. James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays and Fridays, and sometimes Wednesday, every now and then, sometimes Saturday. And Mondays, when Gary's not doing anything, I might show up there too. Oh, by the way, this coming Monday, January 4th, mark your calendar. United Patriots Uprising will be on the air Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Another slam bang, spectacular extravaganza of a show with Gary Benford, our pal. Incidentally, Gary had a birthday yesterday. Gary had a birthday yesterday. And we're just going to make this like a 3 or 4 day Benford birthday jubilee, since he's going to, you know, we talked to him since for New Year's Eve up until the 4th. We're just going to throw it all out, all Benford all the time. Happy birthday, Gary. We love you, man. We really do. You got a terrific program, and I'm really proud to be associated with it. And that is no joke. Hey, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Most of you know that I like to go to a place called the Conservative Treehouse. In terms of show prep, I lean on it a lot. There are a lot. There are about a half a dozen places that I have confidence in, and I'm totally comfortable in relying on. And if these guys say it, yeah, you can pretty much hang your hat on it. And I, this has been borne out to me through my own personal observance and practical application of the stuff that they say. Plus, having heard what they said and read it, and then watching it as these storylines play out, they are consistently correct. And here lately, one of the contributors at the Conservative Treehouse, a person known as Sundance, that's their nom de guerre, is not only a keen political eye, but a fairly decent philosopher as well. And some of the things that I've shared with you over the last week or two have come from Sundance. And if I haven't given them a tip of the hat, my apologies. I mean to. This stuff isn't anything that I could think of. I promise you that. I'm just pretty handy at reading it effectively. 2020 has been a tumultuous year for all of us. New Year's Eve wound down and the new year approaches, and here we are. We're given to consider everything that's taken place. We're challenged. Maybe our center is a little bit askew. Maybe our faith holds a new perspective, or perhaps it's just exhaustion that weighs heavy on us as we rush into the next chapter, hoping, praying for a better tomorrow. But regardless of what tomorrow brings, we have choices. I have long felt that life is like a series of links in a chain. You might be driving down the road and you hear a song on the radio, you see a picture, or you feel a memory. Something triggers that reminds you of a different time and place than where you are right now. You reflect. The memories you consider remind you of a totally different time in your life. Maybe you lived in a different place. Perhaps you were surrounded by different people. Perhaps a different job or completely different friends. You recognize that those memories were constructed like frozen moments in time. They became individual links in the chain of your life. We never actually realize in the immediate moment when one link closes and another link begins. But when we look back, we can clearly see distinct points where things changed, where the link closed and the new link began. You see, links are only visible in reflection. As we reflect, we find parts of the chain in our life where each link closes and connects with another, a beginning and an end. And at the point where the links are joined, we carry parts of the previous link forward to the next one. For many people, those connections are bonded by family or by very strong lifelong relationships, connections which continue beyond our geographic moments, jobs, or temporary acquaintances. But for everyone, the primary bonding agent brought forward from one link to the next is ourselves, our center, our values and core principles, our beliefs. The strength of the steel, which comprises the links of our lives, is determined by forging in the fire of adversity, weakness, challenge, pain, loss, and painful growth. The steel is then cooled with the tears of triumph, hurdles overcome, and resolve. The forging makes the steel stronger and able to withstand the pressures that accompany the additional link. Slowly, the chain becomes wiser as it lengthens, able to reach further, form more significant benefits, and become more useful. Hope replaces fear. Love replaces loneliness. Success replaces adversity. These are successful links that began and were finished while contributing to the whole of the chain. At times, we may manipulate the chain links with avoidance. We hide from or choose to avoid an issue in our effort to begin a new link before the old one was naturally and spiritually prepared to be closed. Eventually, as life continues and the chain lengthens, the weak link will fracture, and we're forced to revisit or repair what we originally chose to avoid. See, in life, we cannot control the universal laws that guide us. So if we manipulate circumstances to avoid confronting our own weakness, we cannot fully strengthen our life of links. Eventually, the weakness of our past will impact our future. So what principles do we carry from link to link? What core values and beliefs stay with us throughout the journey of our lives? The answers to these questions are what makes us human spiritual beings. We possess free will to make choices about what we do and how we define our individual humanity. But can we then define right and wrong according to our individual principles, or are there principles that exceed our influence and definition? Are there natural laws of right and wrong, good and bad, that can't be subjected to the determination of man? These are the bigger questions, perhaps the more important questions, and yet perhaps the ones we reflect upon the least. Consider the example of the law of the farm versus law of the school. Natural principles versus those made by man. A student can skip class, take few notes, pay only half attention, and stay up all night cramming for a test and manage a decent grade. It depends on the student's goal, grades, or learning. The student can choose to manipulate the education by avoiding the learning and capturing the grade. This is possible in the law of the school. However, a farmer can't take shortcuts. The farmer cannot avoid tending to the soil, preparing the seed, fertilizing, nurturing the crop, and still gain benefit of an abundant harvest. A farmer must necessarily do all the appropriate work in order to benefit from it, such as the law of the farm, the natural law. When one considers the weakness remaining within a poorly constructed and manipulated link, perhaps established by selfish choices and driven by avoidance and fear, one can be faithfully assured that those who have dealt dishonestly with us will have to visit the issues of their association yet again. Conversely, no amount of manipulation or avoidance on our own behalf is going to improve the frailty of any link without first resolving the lack of character which created that particular weakness. So we have choices in our lives. Decisions we each make regarding how we interact and participate in the lives and links of others, as well as how we choose to construct the links that compromise our own lives. Do we base our sense of purpose around natural principles? Principles based on the natural laws of right and wrong and good and bad, truth, lies. Do we forge strong links based on following our heart, our values? If we could interact with others absent of a prideful, self-driven agenda or manipulative intent, we can then apply such principles and strength to our endeavors. If we protect the integrity of the soil upon which we build the foundations of our lives, we can live without regret. If we fertilize and cherish our crop and the crop of our neighbors, with honesty and sincere appreciation for the souls we meet along our chosen path, we'll live a life of abundance. If we tend carefully to the consideration of everyone, yet holding true to our values and principles, we can strengthen ourselves amid the face of adversity and disenchantment. If we do not hide from nor ignore our individual and collective faults, we can build the chain of our life with strength, humility, purpose. Not dead air, just basking in the afterglow of that. And that's probably about the third or fourth time I've read it. Obviously, because I want to do a good job delivering it to you guys. But every time I've read it, it comes down to that right there. And I just kind of like stop and go, well, I think with that, we're going to go ahead and call it a night. It's 8:30, New Year's night, lots of things going on that I know you guys would much rather be doing, and you probably are. So from the archive, Happy New Year. We're here Tuesday and Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a recorded version of the program that goes out over the Mojo 5-0 Radio Network, mojo50.com. You want to go check those guys out, because if you aren't listening, you really should be. Some of the very best of libertarian and conservative talk radio out there. Coming up this Monday, January 4th, right here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com, our pal, my brother Gary Binford with United Patriots Uprising, another barn-burning show. You're not going to want to miss that. From everyone here at The Conservative's Perspective, from Jerry Binford, from Melissa Petrie, from El Guapo, Mark Hoffman, and myself. Oh, and Francis Wood. I'm sorry. Better not forget her. From all of us, I hope it was a terrific new year for you. We wish nothing but the best, a peaceful and a prosperous 2021 from all of us and all of you. So thank you so much for the opportunity to visit with you this evening. God bless you. God bless America. We'll be talking to you in just a few more days, next Tuesday, taking a look at things. I'll be doing a show Sunday at 4 on the Mojo 5 Radio. But as it goes here for the live stuff, I'll see you Tuesday, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. You guys take good care of yourselves, and we'll see you then.